You're listening to Leadership Podcast, a series of short, insightful discussions with experts in the field of volunteer leadership. Brought to you by the AREA Center for Leadership Development, your interviewer is Elaine LaChapelle.
I'm speaking today with Dr. Piers Steele. He's a professor of procrastination, as he calls himself, and the author of Procrastination Equation. So glad you could join us today.
I'm so happy to be here.
Great. Well, I mean, I think my most obvious question to start with is, who in the world procrastinates?
Well, I would suspect you. To start off with,
you'd probably be right. Well,
yeah, that's right. Well, it's because everybody procrastinates to some degree. I mean, we've found procrastination in every culture. In Hawaii, they call it Napa. In Scotland, they call it Mafling. In every time period, epoch, and pretty much in every person, though. It does vary a little bit by degree. You know, not everyone procrastinates the same, and not in all the same things. Some people are really work-focused, and they've really got their game on there. But when you take a look at their family life, or their health, or other issues, they're putting stuff off. You know, a lot of people are going to eventually, for example, you know, the big thing that people procrastinate is on their wills, or their finances. A lot of people pass away not having a functioning will. Or people procrastinate on, do they floss regularly? Are they calling their parents? It's always something if you look hard enough. Typically, though, you'll find that men procrastinate a little bit more than women. The younger, definitely much more than old when you're older. Just think about yourself back when you were teens.
Or my teenage self.
Exactly, right? No, as we mature, our character matures. And we procrastinate less, but we never get down to zero. So this is something that kind of like a common pulse of humanity. You know, no matter what culture you go around the world, you can sure they also procrastinate there.
Wow. It's very prevalent, but is it ever a good thing?
It can be, but it's by accident. You know, of course, everyone has a story about where they left something to the last minute and they did well or was canceled. Mm-hmm. But this is kind of like it's a gambling. And because procrastination isn't just putting things off. It's putting things off till later that you think, by your own standards, you should do now. So it's putting off despite expecting to be worse off. And because of that, more often, you're right. More often, Elsa, you're right. You are. You should have done that earlier. So when you actually take a look at the more people procrastinate, the less happy, the less healthy, and the less wealthy they are. Mm-hmm. You know, when we're putting off, let's say, dealing with our debt, or let's say, a sickness, that's where it gets really, really costly. If people actually have an ailment and they're not seeing their doctor about it and they've put it off, you know, for example, my mother-in-law, she had put off her colonoscopy and she died because of that. That's the price procrastination can potentially
pay.
Yeah.
There must be a lot more stress too.
Yeah.
When you procrastinate.
Yeah, even if you get it done. You know, ultimately do you appreciate that sleepless night before?
So why do we do it? Why in the world, with all that ramification, would we procrastinate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. You know, I mean, here it is. Everyone does it, and everyone suffers for it. You think, how come is that? It's really because it's baked into almost our source code. We evolved for about 100 million years in a world which had a very short timeline. There was today, and there was a few days after that. And beyond that, the world was out of your control. So we have a mind that's best suited for the here and now and a little afterwards. But we now live in a world with all these long-term deadlines. We have four-year plans and retirement funds. And there's a mismatch. There's a mismatch between our urges and what's urgent. You like that?
I do.
But yeah, you can even, nowadays with the incredible advances in neurobiology, they've actually managed to almost crack open the brain and actually see what's going on. And essentially, there's two decision-making systems. I didn't want to get too technical here. But we have a limbic system, which is reactive, and it focuses on the here and the now and environmental cues, especially what you can smell, touch, taste, or feel. And then you have a prefrontal cortex, which is good in the abstract. And this is where you make all your plans. But you see, you have two decision-making systems now in your head.
Right.
So you make plans for the future. But when you actually come to enact those plans, that's when the limbic system gets activated and says, oh, you wanted to go on a diet? Yeah, but there's a real tangible chocolate mousse in front of me right now, and I want it. You got the craving. And so you have people making intentions and then going back on them.
You know, and it's what we're all going through all the time.
So I guess the most obvious last question then is, what do we do about it?
Oh, there's lots you can do about it. Step one, buy my book. Step two, read your book. And there we're done.
Perfect. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Oh, there we go. All right. But there's a lot of different techniques that have been devised. I mean, this is something that's been being society, humankind, have been experiencing for thousands, millennia, thousands of years. And so over that time, we have come up with quite a few different techniques for actually how to tackle it. And science has really taken interest in this in the last 50 years. There's been over 800 studies done on procrastination.
Oh my
gosh. Yeah, from economics to neurobiology. And so they've been refining them. And there's certain ones that we find that one of the most powerful ways of actually stopping people from procrastinating is to remove obvious temptations. I mean, the proximity, how easy it is for you to do otherwise, is a great determinant, a great predictor of whether you're going to give in. So, for example, if you find yourself like excessively looking at your email, and most people look at over 50 times per day, and every time you look at it, it takes about 15 minutes for you to refocus back on your core work, it means that you never get to that, you know, zone, that pure zone of productivity. Mm-hmm. But if you turn off the ding, that cue that kind of the limbic system kind of craves, if you turn off your indicators and you actually look at it at your own convenience, people tend to be a lot more productive. Of course, it kind of comes a little harder if you have to, if you're expected to be instantly available.
Right, right.
Of course, there's other tricks around dealing with that as well.
Yeah. So actually changing your environment changing the situation as opposed to, as you said, just trying to deal with it.
That's right. I mean, if you're going on a diet, you know, a hot plate of cookies under your face are going to be eaten a lot faster than the very same cookies under a tin. In fact, they did this wonderful little experiment with secretaries where they put bowls full of candy in front of them. But the only difference was one of the bowl was opaque, and for the other group, it was transparent. Same candy, same distance, and when it was transparent, people ate 50% more. So just control those cues. Make your temptations less obvious, if not less available.
Excellent. Well, good, good. Well, thank you so much. I wish we had way more time, but I know people can find out a little bit more information by taking a look at your book, The Procrastination Equation. I've been speaking with Dr. Pierce Steele. Website, Procrastinus, procrastinus.com. Excellent. Thank you so much, Pierce.
Great to be here.
You've been listening to Leadership Podcast. To subscribe to this podcast, go to ARIA.com/leadership.